Good morning, Tokyo. My name is Brendan Forster, and I work at GitHub, and I'm going to talk to you today about some stuff around integrating GitHub into your organizations. I can kind of see people out there in the crowd. I'll come back to, out of curiosity before we get into it, how many people are using GitHub right now? Can you raise your hands? Oh, about half of the room. Excellent, excellent. How many of you are using GitHub Enterprise? This talk is relevant to both, and I'll go into a bit more detail about that later. If you want to follow me on Twitter or GitHub, that is my handle. That is also my dog in the photo. If you have questions, I'll be around for the Ask the Experts event afterwards. Otherwise, you can come find me at the GitHub booth this afternoon. But I'm here to talk about API integrations. So one of the things that I do at GitHub is look after the .NET bindings. So if you're using C# or .NET applications, we have this wrapper on top of the GitHub API. So you can call this stuff from C#. I'm not going to use that for this talk, but if you kind of want to dive in and get started without understanding all the ins and outs of the platform, there is that option for you. So I've got three goals for this talk, kind of just walking through some of the API concepts so that you can apply the stuff whether you're doing .NET or Java or Node or just any sort of technologies. I want to give you some ideas about sort of integrations that are out there at the moment, and we've got a lot of demos. So all the demos I've done today are in Node. Hopefully, because of network connectivity, the demos go well, but I'll polish up the demos as well afterwards so that you too can play around with the stuff. And as I said before, this stuff is relevant to both GitHub and GitHub Enterprise. There's some stuff that is enterprise specific, which I'll show you in a second. But first, why? Why go down this path? Like, you've got GitHub working inside your company. Why go and build stuff on top of it? The big things that I like to think about with doing this stuff is there is data there. Why not get it out and experiment with it? The other fun stuff that comes up is when you're in an environment where you have a whole bunch of different systems around, how can you put those things together? We've got some options that we support, and so I'll go through some of those today. But ultimately, I think an opportunity to automate stuff as teams are working on projects and moving things around, there are ways to kind of just glue things together and have less humans involved with the process. So I can't go any further without pointing to our official documentation. So developer.github.com. A whole bunch of resources here. This is also where you can go for our official developer program. But the fun stuff is this tab here, API. So there's a whole bunch of resources on the right side, and you can just kind of explore what stuff is available on the GitHub site. So my favorite example is going into repositories, user repositories there, and the examples that we've got here are call this request, call this endpoint with these arguments, and you'll get JSON back. Very simple to kind of get started with. But ultimately, there is just lots of stuff floating around. Other little sections that you've got up here, webhooks, which we'll talk about later, are a bit more advanced. Guides, just kind of like playing around with the platform experience from our team just being shared. And libraries. So there's the official OctaKit libraries that GitHub supports. If you go further down the list, there are things for Dart, Erlang. If you've got a program language you care about, there is probably going to be a GitHub binding for it. Ooh, Julia. So, coming back. So, next demo, let's call this API. So, I have a little Node project here. I'm just going to pop it open in Atom. So, for those of you who aren't familiar with Node at all, the way that you consume packages is with this require statement on the first line. And so I'm pulling in this package called request, which is a sort of like a bare metal library for making HTTP calls. I've got some plumbing code down here for handling my callback, but ultimately, down the bottom here, I invoke request with some options. So first thing I'm gonna do is come in here and do this. So I'm going to call something from the main API website. Talking about repositories before, I'm going to come in here and say users, shift key, tester, repos. So this lines up with, where was I in my docs? Reference, I go users. No, I go back to repos, excuse me. So I'm going to call this endpoint here. I'm not going to pass it any sort of arguments. I'm just going to kind of get started with playing around with it. So that's the stuff that I've got. Switch back to my terminal. Node index.js. Let's run it up. Oh, it failed. What have I missed? What have I missed? So the first tip that I have for people who are playing around with the API is that we have user agent requirements. So I'll just zoom in here a bit so you guys can follow along. So we require that people send through a user agent header when they're making any sort of requests. Ultimately, it's for us to then be able to support you guys and reach out if there are things that could be done better or things that aren't quite working as we expected. So if you don't send a user agent, we'll 403 you straight away. Back out. So come back in here. So that should be right. Let's try it again. Cool. I've got some repositories down. Down the bottom here, I'm just deserializing the JSON and looking at the length of the array. Nothing really fancy, but ultimately, I now know that I have a number of repositories. But I don't like this number 20. It's not quite what I expect. So over here, I can see on the site, I've got like 27 repos associated with my account. Where have they gone? So the clever people in the crowd might have picked up that I haven't provided any sort of credentials as part of making this request. I could at this point jump in and say authorization, basic, and then work out how to basics for encode my username and password. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something else. And it's what we have, a way to kind of just make it easy to generate tokens. Over here on the left sidebar, we have personal access tokens. And so this is a way for you to kind of just quickly grab a token, associate it with your account, and use it in scripts. So I have a couple set up here. I'm just going to create a new one. So this is where things get interesting. So tokens are not universally able to do everything with regard to your account. There's a number of ways that you can lock these things down, and by default, they are very limited. I'm just going to click the repo box. I'm going to give it some details. I am at decode. You'll see here that there's various sorts of areas around like users and administration of repository hooks. Don't worry about all that stuff now. We will dive deeper into that later. So generate my token. I get a value back. Uniform, switch this out, token blah. Run it up again. That's not what I expected. So I did not change the context around, and this is where my demo was backwards. So there's different endpoints as part of the GitHub API which are contextual. So if you are logged in, if you're acting as a certain user, you don't need to specify things in the routes. So in my repositories thing here, so see how we've got here, list your repositories, and in here, there's no username mentioned here. I'm going to switch my method over to that and see if I get a different result. You'll see here there's a whole bunch of additional parameters that are available, and this is where things get interesting. So my test account has permissions to other repositories, whereas this API was just looking at the stuff that I own under my user account. So let's switch this out. User repos. And then, beautiful. Different number now. I'm seeing more of my GitHub data, but I still know that number's not right. And the little 30 number is the giveaway. So most of our APIs support pagination, the ability to, the ability to go through data in a more bulk way or just a limited way. So there's a couple of arguments up there that are interesting, the page number and then per page. So I'm going to use that value here. So by default, we give you 30 items per page, but I'm going to bump it up to a 100 in my test. And we have 43. So That's ultimately all the repositories my test account has got, but this gives you an idea of, like, as you kind of want to explore the API, the stuff that's available, we've touched on needing credentials, needing a user agent, pagination, and the fact that some endpoints don't need hard-coded IDs. So, coming back to here. So let's just look at our little script here. So this is, it's kind of interesting in terms of being able to kind of pull data out of GitHub. It's kind of tied to a certain user account at this point, which is okay. But ultimately, it's kind of limited in what we can do. So the next little part of this talk is for me to dive into what we call OAuth applications. So OAuth itself is a protocol for two systems to handshake and negotiate permissions on behalf of a user. So I say authorization rather than authentication because it's not really tied to identity. It's tied to behavior in the other system. And so this is an example from DigitalOcean's documentations on OAuth. They run through essentially the six steps for it. In the context of my application, I'm on the left and GitHub here is on the right. So I send off a request to GitHub to say, I would like to do something on behalf of this user. The user then authorizes me to do some stuff. The server then says, hey, you have got these details. It gives me some data. And then I go and request a token using that data, and I get that token back. It's a little bit complicated, but thankfully, lots of platforms out there have implementations for OAuth, so it's not really something to stress about. So I'll show you guys how to set up an OAuth app, and then we'll dive into what that looks like with actual code. So I'm back in my settings page. In the sidebar here, we have OAuth applications. Yeah, very straightforward. I go to my developer applications tab. I then register. I call it something. So these are just some details that appear on the GitHub site when the user needs to authenticate. Some URL.com. This is thing. But the interesting thing is this last value, the authorization callback URL. This is this tells GitHub where it should send the details when it's actually confirmed that user's authorized. The general convention is some url.com/callback. So just a simple URL that then GitHub knows to post data to. And I register that, I get some details around the client ID and the secret. I include those when I send off my request. But on the whole, that's essentially all you need to do. So I have a sample application. Auth demo. So I'll run through what this code is doing in a second. I'm going to show you the demo first. So I made the silliest site in at least a month that I've done. The site is protecting a picture of a bunny rabbit. And to then sign in, I want you to OAuth with my app. So I do my sign-in step. This puts me back onto GitHub. I am signed in, so this now, it simply says, hey, do you trust this app? I get some details here around what the application is, who's behind it. I also get an idea of what permissions it needs. So I can, that explains, like, hey, it only wants to read your notifications. That seems reasonable. It's not going after all my private repos. What's fun about this stuff is organizations are also involved. Because OAuth applications are registered on GitHub, we can then let organizations whitelist applications. And so this is restricted by default. So if I go in and register that, it kicks me back to the site, and because I am off successfully, I get the picture of the bunny rabbit. So what is this code? Come on, Adam, come on. All right. So for those of you who aren't quite familiar with Node, I've set up a Express app. So Express is a popular web framework for Node projects. It's got a main file there called app.js, and then there's some other bits and pieces. So the fun stuff is hidden away in this auth route. So inside my auth route, I'm using an auth library that ships with Node. I pass in some details, the client ID, the secret, where it needs to go for doing the token stuff. I will emphasize clearly that I'm not hard coding these strings in my source code. I keep seeing this come up again and again where people commit this stuff up and then it ends up public and then everyone is sad. Please use environment variables when you are managing sensitive data. So after setting up my OAuth, I work out what permissions my application needs. In this case, there's my little notification string. I can come back and change that later. We'll see how far we get with this demo. We then have just simple routes for when I want to authenticate. It then goes and sends me off to GitHub. And here's my callback. So once GitHub authorizes me, it comes back, sends me a request with the code. My code then goes off and requests the token that I need on behalf of the user. You'll note that there is a bit of munging of strings here because I get a number of values back rather than just the token. And so once I find that value, I go off to GitHub. I go and find out what user is associated with this, and then I set that stuff in my session. Fairly straightforward, but ultimately that's the flow. I send the user off to GitHub. I get some details back if they confirm. I can then request the token, and then I can start working with some data. So when I said that organizations have the ability to restrict applications, I will show you where that stuff hides on the site. So third-party access is the area. See how down here, here's my Something with Bunnies app. I think with new organizations, by default, we have this enabled. For old organizations, you might not have, you might have to opt into this behavior, but it's a way here to kind of lock down your organization and then whitelist specific apps. So you see my Something with Bunnies app is denied. I could come in here and grant it access if I wanted to, but for now, I think that people can live without this. Cool. So the relationship between applications and users is kind of straightforward. So the application determines what it needs from the user then authorizes it. And ultimately, the benefit of that, because it's delegated out, it can be revoked at a later time. Organizations then can control what users, what applications get access to their user data, because we're trying to strike this balance at GitHub with data visibility versus actually empowering the users to trust us. So that was my demo site. The code for that will be up a little bit later. So webhooks is probably my favorite API feature just because of all the crazy stuff that can be done with it. If you think about it in terms of events that can happen on GitHub, it becomes an ability to kind of put things together in an asynchronous way. So this is, let me see if I can explain webhooks in about 5 minutes. So this is a GitHub, not to scale, of course. Someone makes a comment on GitHub and GitHub updates the site and behind the scenes it works out. Is there anyone who cares about this? And so we have what we call webhooks as a concept throughout the GitHub portal. It goes off and says, hey, someone has this webhook set up for me. I'm going to send them details about this issue comment. So it sets up a post and it sends the data off to my server, in this case where I have the webhook set up. The operation then succeeds. But inside that payload as part of the request is a bunch of JSON. Very similar to what we have before with the API, but it's related to what just happened. So I can do some stuff on the server because I knew that stuff just happened. So what sort of things can be done, or what sort of things are being done with webhooks out there at the moment? So my favorite example is continuous integration. So when you open up a pull request, a webhook gets sent to an external server, it pulls down your code, and then it does some building or testing. So probably one of the most famous ones out there that's built on top of GitHub is Travis. So they do open source projects and infrastructure for particularly OS X and Linux VMs. So they do the same flow. They say, oh, off my app, you know, add a repository, that adds the webhooks, and it then goes off and builds as things change. Another one that's there if you're using lots of Windows, if you've been in Windows software, is AppVeyor. They do open source projects as well, but they also do enterprise support. Similar thing, they all with your app, you then give them access to your repos, and then they just build stuff in the background. Even Visual Studio has the ability to plug in webhooks into your repository and do builds off of that. Code review is another interesting example. So the we have pull requests on GitHub itself, but people will build stuff on top of our pull request experience. The one that I like that it's rather quirky is approving pull requests. It's not a feature that exists on GitHub, but the external site says, hey, we'll take care of managing this stuff, and they'll listen to pull request events that go back and forth. Similar one in that vein is Code Climate. So Code Climate looks at your code and performs static analysis to determine if it compiles, if there are various known vulnerabilities with the code that's there. It sits down and basically works the stuff out in the background. Because as a human, I really don't want to do this stuff by hand, so why not delegate to a machine? Another example is Hound CI. They do style analysis rather than static analysis. They do a whole bunch of stuff like Node, Ruby, Swift, I think, is another one that came up. But they sit there in between the pull request and analyze the style of your code. Issue management is another popular one that happens. People build stuff on top of the GitHub issue tracker, and they plug into webhooks. Hubord, I'm good friends with the team on this one here, they've built sort of a Kanban flow. So you have all your issues modeled, and you have their custom UI, which you move stuff around. They send stuff back to GitHub. We send webhook events to them. A similar one that's interesting of this is ZenHub. They actually have a browser plugin that sits, they modify the GitHub UI in Chrome and Firefox to then look more like a fancy issue tracker. Now, deployment is something that is definitely, I think, underutilized in this day and age. So imagine if you were able to trigger a deployment for your site. You do that. You can actually do that as part of the GitHub API. CodeShips, one of our popular integrators, they do stuff with Docker. This one here is BuildKite, an Australian team. They don't have any infrastructure. They let you bring your own infrastructure. And when you want to do deployments, they organize the orchestration of the deployments. At GitHub itself, we have a whole bunch of deployment infrastructure that is built on top of the GitHub API. You might know Hubot from our various talks about him in the past, but Hubot organizes our deployments. We tell Hubot, release GitHub to production, and Hubot will go off and organize, this deployment needs to go here, this deployment needs to go there. We do all this stuff via chat rather than from a specific portal. The flexibility that's there is, I believe, definitely underrated, and I might have a little rant about this at the end, but ultimately, yes, all of this stuff is driven by webhook events. There's more integrations up there if you want to start exploring what other stuff is there that you can use today. But I'm going to do a little demo. So my demo here is going to go through the end-to-end stuff. We saw OAuth before. We're going to do these other bits here. So the webhook stuff is a way that then you can plug in to GitHub and get stuff out in real time. So my demo repo. It's a private repo. We have some settings. In the portal, we have webhooks and services. Cool, my demo is failing. Let's not worry about that now. I'll take that out. So this is one that I had prepared earlier but had not cleaned up. So when I come in here and set up my webhook, I give it basically just the destination. There's a secret as well. And similar to what we had with permissions for OAuth apps, I tell GitHub what events I'm interested in. I could say all of them, in which case I'd have to work out what to process. But here's, I'm just only interested in a couple. I will have a look at that next failure in a second. But as webhooks are being sent to my server, I can come back to this side here and troubleshoot what's happened. So if I have a look at this failing one here, I can see what I got sent. and what I sent back. It's not really clear what's happened here, but that's fine. I'm just going to jazz hands that away. Delete that webhook. And come back to my site. So demo, GitHub webhooks. Cool. So the demo that I'm going to do today is around one of my pet hates with open source projects. So someone opens up an issue or a pull request and there's no description. This little guy here is going to pick up when that happens and it's going to drop a comment in to say, hey, could you tell me more? You know, very boring name. I'm not good at marketing pitches. I apologize. So like before, I authorized this app. It's asking me for a bit more. It's looking for my private repositories and it's asking for webhook access. This seems reasonable. It's not going to get approved by my org because it's been locked down. I could grant it access, but I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to authorize my current data. So that succeeds. I come back to the site, and it goes through, and it finds all my repositories. I can go and find my decode test repo there. And it says, hey, you haven't got webhooks set up for this. Would you like to do it? Sure. Cool, it's been enabled. We want to undo it. That's fine. So I'm going to go back and forth and enable those webhooks, but for now, let's look at that. So come back to the site. Ah, it's working. Beautiful. So as part of setting up the webhook, it sends off basically a ping message to make sure that everything is set up right. So in here, I can see there's my event, the ping. Some IDs for just managing correlation between requests, the signature bit, which I'll explain a bit more in a second, and just some JSON. So to test that this is really working, I'm going to come back to this repo, and I'm going to create an issue without a description. So in theory, that should send off a webhook request. And it might automatically update the website. No. Yes. So behind the scenes, my other account jumped up and said, hey, you haven't submitted a description. The demo works. Phew. So let's say I come back in. I say, I update my comment, and of course it won't magically refresh, so I have to do a refresh like that, and the message goes away, because everything is good. That's it's a lot of work to do this, so come on. So what was this magic? Webhooks demo. So like before, beautiful. So I've got my auth module from before. I then have a couple of extra modules. Like before, I have hooks set up. So if I look at my route for delete hook. So the first route that I've got here is looking at the details for this specific repository. This is just ways to get tokens out of the URL in Express. I then go off and try and find the hook on GitHub. If it's there, I render out one view or another. It's not that interesting. I then have separate routes for creating the hook and deleting the hook, and that code is using a GitHub wrapper. So GitHub wrapper Octocat for Node, it's reasonably good. I go through and then I look at the hooks. If you've not seen this syntax before, this is for what we call JavaScript promises, so a way to chain together stuff asynchronously. I then look at the results of the queue of the hooks. Some tracing code, don't mind me. So if I find the hook, I return it. If not, it's not there. And creating the webhook is done in a similar way. I have details for like where the webhook should go, i.e. to send it to me. The secret token there also helps with verifying that what I'm being sent is actually from GitHub and not from a third party trying to impersonate GitHub. And then cleaning up the hook, it's kind of the same. Yeah, not much code, but that's how we're managing the webhooks. So the next part is what the webhook is actually doing. And I will skip the JavaScript stuff and go straight down to the bottom. So here is my webhook method that GitHub knows to send stuff to me. In theory, my verify signature code was failing during part of the demo. We'll come back to that. But then I just pull out some details from the request headers and see what action is happening. So if I've got a ping, I can process that. If I've got issues, if I've got an issue event, I can process in different ways. This is just robust enough to know like if something is interesting or something isn't. So the issue event is kind of straightforward. I pull out properties from the JSON. There's my little message that I'm looking for. I look at the state of the issue and try and figure out whether I need to do something as part of my integration. And so you remember how I said that OctoCat, the OctoCat library, was rather decent. It didn't have stuff for issued comments at the time, so I had to drop back to request to write the stuff by hand. That's my delete code. So up the top here, I have my submit comment method. I generate the URL, and I do a post with the details to say, hey, you know, this stuff is, let's interact. I can then resolve to say, you know, let's clean up the issue. So I go through, find the issue comments, find the one that's interesting to me. It's a bit rough code, but that's deleting the comment. So the security stuff is, in theory, rather interesting. So we take, as GitHub generates the message, it'll then hash the content and give you a SHA-1 string. Ideally, you should then do the same thing on your side with the message you receive, and if the two values match up, it should be you should be able to trust us. And so when I was creating the webhook, I had a secret defined. Here we go. So when I create the webhook, I have that secret, I give that to GitHub. GitHub then uses that to sign the messages that come back to me. If those things are out of sync, then either I'm not calculating it right, or maybe it's someone else trying to send me these messages. But this was failing for me when I deployed it, so I've just commented out. Ideally, this should work. I just did not have time to finish up the investigating. So just one thing to come back to. So when I'm authenticating this app, I have certain scopes defined. If I was to keep this app running over time and need certain permissions, I could change this. And when I re-authenticate, GitHub will say, hey, there's a permissions change, and it'll ask the user to re-authenticate again. This stuff is not locked in forever as part of your app. And if you need to change it, just make sure your user's re-auth. So there were some other things with webhooks while I was in here. Cool. Yes. So yes, we have a whole page. So yeah, we have a whole page on GitHub developer website about securing the webhooks. I definitely recommend giving it a read and setting up by default. So I've got some time on my sleeve, so I'm going to show you the impact of changing the scopes. And just generally how I've got this deployed. So update this. So I'm using basic Git deploys. Kids, don't try this at home. So I'm just taking whatever I've got and publishing it up to GitHub. It's fine. That then goes off to Azure to then be deployed. Beautiful. the apps that I have set up. We want webhooks. So one of the reasons why I chose Node was it's not necessarily tied to a certain platform. So I just have environmental variables set up for stuff. So I could take the stuff and deploy it to Heroku or AWS. They have decent Node support as well as Azure. So these are just the stuff that I don't think should live in the code. Some stuff is a bit more for flexibility, but for the most part, all the secrets are away from the source code. So let's see if my demo is up to date. So you have a webhooks. So the demo sites that I've got here don't necessarily have a backing database. All the stuff is done in session, and so when I reset the server, I lose all that stuff. So we should see I need to sign in again, and it should stop me with some different details by the old scope, and it did not. So that's fine. So on top of repository webhooks, there's also a different set of webhooks, which are called organization webhooks. So these ones, this is a way that you can apply things globally to your organization rather than to specific repos. So down the bottom here, I come into webhooks, and it's a very similar experience. I then have all these events. The one thing that you will see is things like teams. So organizations have teams as a way to organize people. If you want to hook into that stuff and do stuff related to your organization, you can set up a webhook to then do the same. Yeah, so member, team. And I realize I completely missed. So, reference, other interesting things that we've got. Enterprise. So Enterprise 2.6 has a number of specific features. So if you're administering an enterprise server, you can automate a whole bunch of this stuff as well. If you have LDAP integration, you can synchronize that programmatically. You can manage indexes. And it's all done in a similar way to the actual public GitHub API. Stuff's there. So I will come back and rant about deployments. Let's do that. So deployments themselves, look at all these details. So this is kind of why it's a bit tricky for people to get started to. So some sort of tool, let's say Hubot, goes into GitHub and says, hey, I'm going to start a deployment. I'm going to do it to my test environment. We then send a deployment event to somewhere else. That system that's responsible for actually shuffling the bits around goes off and copies the bits onto the server. That thing completes. It then sends a deployment status back to GitHub. So it is a bit complicated to put together, and that's why other options have taken off. But in terms of like the freedom to kind of like not worry about your deployments, I still think this stuff is really, really valuable. To make it super clear with this stuff is that GitHub is not actually doing the deployments itself. We're simply orchestrating so that you know what code you've got has been published to which system. And we do have a whole bunch of support for various sorts of environments. And so the ability to say, hey, production, staging, test, you know, server 1, 2, 3, all that stuff is baked into the API, and so then it'll flow through to your other systems. Other interesting things that have come up that you might not have heard about is commit statuses. So commit statuses are there for external systems to approve or reject commits. We use these on pull requests to make sure that things are green before they get merged. An example that I've got here is from the OctoKit project that I maintain. So I can come in here and have a look at the pull requests that are up there for GitHub for my project, and there's greens and reds. So what's happening here? So I'm doing CI against Travis and AppVeyor, so I get Windows, Mac, and Linux builds. The AppVeyor one is succeeding, but the Travis one is failing. Let's have a look. The link sends me over to Travis. Oh, they're both failing. That's not good. But the whole idea is that it's this little red check mark. So when the tip of the branch is updated, that then sends off a webhook event to anything that's interested, in this case, the two CI products. They will then report back an event when it's completed, and that stuff is just done through what we call the commit status API. So let's reset this. So see how it's updated? So it's no longer failed. It's now rerunning the builds. That's the webhook event. Actually, then Travis coming back and saying, hey, I'm going to give this another shot. All that stuff is driven from commit statuses. Other little quirks to kind of overlook at GitHub Pages. If you're using GitHub Pages for any of your public or private-facing sites, we surface that stuff through events. We serve that stuff through the GitHub API. It's constrained to administrators, but ultimately you can have a look and see. You get a whole bunch of details around who did the deployment, how long it took, did it succeed. All that stuff is there as well. If you saw that we shipped emoji reactions as part of GitHub, that stuff is being rolled out currently as a preview API. So for features that we're not quite sure are complete, we will make them available to people on GitHub, but we will say you have to opt in for it because the behavior might change between now and when it's done. And so the way that you opt in for that is to pass in a custom accept header. Again, it's all about talking HTTP, but this is the way that you kind of then can do reactions programmatically, or you can get the details about the reactions from the site itself. If you've ever dealt with, or if you're ever interested in migrating repositories from GitHub to GitHub Enterprise, that stuff is in the API as well. If you've ever done stuff with, if you ever want to manipulate the Git database itself, that is create blobs, trees, and commits behind the scenes, you can also do that via the API. There's a whole bunch of stuff under the hood. I definitely recommend having a look at it because it's actually really fun. So probably the trickiest part of the GitHub API is search. We've got some interesting stuff in here around the ability to just kind of query. But if you have a look at all the options that are here, it is kind of crazy. Lots of people will go through and script stuff out. If you've heard about people scraping GitHub for things like AWS tokens, they're going to be doing it through the search API. So for those two demos that I've got set up, I do have repos available for them. I haven't made them public yet, but I'll make them public after the talk. It's fairly straightforward. Once you wrap your head around Node and how the various things work, I was able to push them up to Azure fairly quickly and just start hacking on this stuff. If you want to have a play, yeah, that's where it's going to be. So I've got a bit of extra time now left. Is there anyone have any questions? Tough. Oh, yeah. I haven't left it yet.
Could you say that again? What? So documents.
So the hang on, let me understand. So about the attachments to issues.
No, I mean you use the API difference document.
Oh, API difference document. I don't know in particular. So the question for those listening to the recording is, are you guys going to publish an API difference documentation? Yeah, I don't know of anything officially on that in that regard, but I'll definitely take that to the team for their consideration. Yeah. Cool. Oh man. Cool. Well, I'm going to hang around for a little bit. If you've got any other questions, otherwise, yeah, enjoy the rest of the show. And there is also going to be some speaker evaluations that come up afterwards, so please fill them in so that we get feedback.